Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from a new undisclosed Cave of Solitude location, as well as the mega city metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and back joining me for this episode in the Cave of Solitude is none other than everybody's favorite co-host of mine, the wonderful, the magnificent, the gregarious, the femme fatale herself,
Lady J.
Hello.
There you go. So, for this episode, we'll get right into it.
Yeah.
In conjunction with everybody's favorite American holiday, July 4th, we're not celebrating Independence Day, but on Netflix, they released part 3, or season 3. What is it, part 3 or season 3? What would you call it?
3.
Just 3.
Yeah.
Stranger Things 3.
Mm.
I don't remember when the last one came out, but I do remember that me and you did a interesting podcast that did halfway through, gave our review, and then did the next half. Yeah, that's what we did.
Oh.
We watched like the first four, and then right in the middle, we podcasted about what we thought so far, where we thought it would go and end up, and then we gave our thoughts at the end of it. But this one we just watched right through. We just
took us a couple of days though.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go that hard in the paint.
Well, I can.
You can.
You know I can.
Yeah, you can. We start shows and then I say, okay, let's watch episode 3. She goes, yeah, I'm done. There's 10 episodes. So, what was your anticipation level like to get part 3 of Stranger Things?
I forgot about it for a while. I think it was a big gap in between, no? I don't remember. Anyway, when they started talking about it coming out, that's when I got excited.
Yeah, I feel like there's two year gaps between these shows.
Is that what it is?
I think. Because when you look at the kids, it feels like...
They look like puppies.
In the first season?
Yeah.
Puppies. Yes.
Yeah, babies.
Yeah. And now it's... they're in that teenager, horrible human
awkward
stage.
Ugly duckling stage.
Yeah. Well, some of them are getting better looking, but other ones are...
No, but it's an actual...
Yeah.
Actually, maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's a dental terminology because there's like a mix of this and that of teeth. So
okay,
they call it the ugly duckling stage.
And you could kind of see it on the characters when you watch the show. Like some of them, their teeth are bigger in certain spots. Their face hasn't grown into
some
it
teeth
yet
are missing. Well, so in Dusty's face, we know why. But
yeah,
there's this transition. And it's just so interesting to see how much time has gone by and how much change there's been with the characters.
Yeah. With a show like this, I mean, they kind of feel like more jumbo movies than they do like television shows because they're so the plots are so big. And
but you prefer that, don't you?
I do. Yeah, I do. But it's one of those things where...
Because it's not being rushed.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually able to tell a story without it being condensed in a two-hour film.
Right.
Where there's the beginning, a middle, and an end. Here, there's like story arcs.
Mm-hmm.
And then developing and transitioning and changing. And doesn't that make it more interesting?
I do. I think what's cool, too, is that you kind of see the characters growing up. So with the time gaps that occur, they film it that way so that they look like it's been however long it's been since the last adventure.
Do you like the era they're doing this one in?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I liked all the eras, actually, because I feel like they make the show rewatchable.
Here they're in the... We just been borned. We were just borned.
We were a year each.
A year and a bit.
Yeah. I was a year and a bit, and you were just under a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When all this was happening in Hawkins.
Hawkins, Indiana.
Is that where it is, Indiana?
Yeah, Indiana.
Is that a real place, Hawkins? Or did they make that place up? What happened there?
I don't know. I'm just scratching my leg.
Stop it.
Okay. I don't know. You could look up. I would never visit. Not this place.
Listen, all those small town type of things, that's where bad things happen. Look at Critters.
Oh, boy.
You know, the aliens came to invade. And Super 8, same idea. Small town,
I feel
living.
Like watching Super 8 after this season of Stranger Things.
There's always that sheriff.
Yeah.
That's caught in the middle.
It's always just the police sheriff.
The government
is
behind everything. And then there's just these few people that know what's really going on, and everybody else is just this cookie cutter.
Classic story tropes. Classic. I can watch those stories all the time.
And they're always white people. They just...
Well, in Hawkins, you have a couple of black families there.
True.
Yeah.
But the majority.
Yeah, the majority. Yeah. It's true. White people hijinks. So, yeah, you said that you had kind of forgotten about it. Now it popped up, July 4th, perfect summertime television show. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
So, how did you feel this one starts off in regards to grabbing your interest? Are you naturally interested in it because you've just been following the characters? So it's almost like you're married to the show, so you got to just keep watching it?
A little bit.
Yeah?
I found this one, I'm going to skip a little bit everywhere. I found this one, it took a while to pick up.
Okay.
But I wonder if it was done on purpose. Like, it's now telling individual stories and their personal growth and development.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's the angle they wanted to do this with.
Uh-huh.
So from that aspect, I got it. I get it. But I do want to know who's the bad guy and how many bad guys are there in this whole thing, because I can't help but go back to how everything started.
Right.
So
I guess we should start off too by saying spoilers. If you don't want to know what happens.
All right. Spoilers. Every time there's always going to be spoilers. If you haven't already known this by now, too bad. So that's where I stand with that. I found it to be slow, but not necessarily slow in... I like that you understood where people were at this time.
Mm-hmm.
However, I found the purpose of the story to be slow. Like, what's going on? How many people know what's happening? And what is the problem?
Mm.
And how many issues are...
Why are we trying to solve, and how do they tie in?
Yes.
Yeah. So when the show starts, which character are you most excited to catch up with? Who's the one I want to know what's happening with them? Who's like your go-to?
To be honest, I didn't have a go-to until they actually started with them. I'm like, oh yeah, he's there. Oh, you know. Oh, yeah, that situation is happening. And, oh, look, her hair's longer. So how much time has actually gone? Oh, they're together, and
they're kissing.
That's what's happening?
Yeah.
And who's kind of transitioned into a fatherly role, and who's the, you know, occupations, and where has the last encounter of this thing, how have people branched off from that situation? What are they doing with their life now? So you learn that Nancy and Jonathan are...
full-fledged couple.
Well, yeah, but like they're working and they're trying to be, well, at least Nancy's trying to become this established reporter of some sort, and Jonathan is still doing his photography thing and he's happy with that. Dingus is like,
who's Dingus?
The guy, the douchebag boyfriend from the first season.
Steve.
Yeah.
You call him Dingus.
Well, that's what he's always referred to as. What? That's his name, Steve.
Steve.
He's always still surrounded by children, but it makes the story interesting, right? Because...
he's had a great story arc, because season you can't stand him, then he redeems himself in the first season.
And I thought for sure he'd be like, you know how they always want to get rid of the douchebag? He's the first one to go and he deserves it.
Right.
But he's stuck around.
And I'm happy.
And he's become likable.
Right.
At least for myself.
Especially because he's good to the kids.
And that's so interesting. And I felt like it was kind of like that third Star Wars, Star Trek movie kind of thing, where they pair off these unlikely people together to tell a story from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what they tried this season, and I thought that was entertaining.
They
kind of
did that in the last season when Steve and Dustin.
Yeah, but there was more groups of people teaming up. Like the guy there, the one that was he doesn't want the government to know where he lives and stuff.
Barry.
Sure. Mm-hmm. The bald eagle guy.
Bald eagle.
Right? He was in the first season a little bit.
Second season.
No, but he was, I think, right in the first season. Like, he looked normal. He went to Hop at the very, very beginning and introduced this idea of Russian intelligence. And Hop was like, are you kidding me? Like, you're stupid. You're crazy. And then I think that's how the other two ended up finding him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became like this recluse of
conspiracy theorist hiding under a bunker.
Yes, kind of, and who knew he was going to play such a role this season? So I thought that was like a turn of, ooh, surprise, you know?
Yeah.
I thought there was a lot of that. There was a lot of unexpected characters either reintroduced or started right from the beginning, like Lucas's sister.
Yeah,
that girl was sassy, and I loved it.
Yeah, she was my favorite. Erica was my favorite character this season.
Yes,
she was hilarious. She was introduced in season two, but more in like a side role.
Mm.
Like Lucas is a family. Like you get to meet his family, but this one, she played a key role.
Yeah,
and they weren't together on screen for majority of the season, which I was like, it's cool to see them use all of the town that have been introduced in the last seasons and how they're all coming together, but everyone's in their separate little cliques and silos to solve this problem that not everyone realizes they're all on the same journey.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they finally meet, they got to put the pieces together. So the biggest thing now in the show is that the town has changed from being like a mom and pop shop town, small town where everyone kind of depends on each other's businesses to get by, and like much of what happened in the 80s, big huge shopping malls are being introduced to these towns, and they become like the
main attraction.
Yeah, they become the attraction, especially in the summer. School's out, everyone is at the mall being cool kids, and there's Walden Books and Sam Goody Records and the movie theater
and the Gap
right? Like it's a whole, you don't realize how growing up in a city how common it was, but when you were in a small town and this is introduced, it introduces a whole new paradigm shift of like socializing and fun things to do and how you interact with people all over again. So that was a cool addition, because in the last season it was them going to the arcade. So each season, as the years go by throughout the 80s, they show you how when a movie has come out or when new technology has been introduced and new ways of socializing are introduced throughout
there's a new shift in socializing.
And how it affects the story.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool because
Or the world.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah.
Like, people back then, kids played outside.
Mm-hmm.
They got into trouble. They got, you know, scrapes on their knees, and
they
used their imagination, and you know, the games that they played were board games. They were actual pieces. Nowadays, it's all electronic, right?
Yeah.
Or it's single players. You don't need another person to play a game.
No, you play with people online. That's your way of interacting.
If that, yeah. Right? So I don't know. Did it make you kind of reminiscent or sad of what the world used to be like?
Of course, but that's what I like. That's what I like about the show is that it reminds me of going out and just riding my bike, and that's what we did for fun, or using your imagination to, you know, recreate a movie to have fun riding your bike and whatever the case may be. So that's why I was saying before. Like I like the fact that this show takes place. It's a period piece in a way where you're beholden to the rules of that time, where if it was taking place now, a lot of things would be easily solved. Text them.
Yeah.
Send them a message.
And it's, you know what? As I was watching this, there was like a couple of scenes where like, you know, someone, there's an accident off the road. And my mind obviously went to like, why isn't he just calling someone?
Right?
And I had to remind myself like, wait, in this time period, that they didn't have cell phones, and if they did, you had to be of a certain status in society to have the latest and greatest. You were lucky to have a phone booth in the middle of nowhere.
And you had to make sure you had quarters.
And you had to walk. Like, you had to problem solve. Like, people had to not panic and rely on basic resources and common sense to make it to the next thing.
Radio waves were your best friend, but the signal had to be, everyone had to be on the same channel in order for it to work. Yeah, but that, I think that's what makes the story fun and interesting, is because there are, in the 80s, there's enough technology to use, but then it's just enough to make you have to be creative, or it puts limits on it. So the story starts, the season starts, I guess we should say, with all of the kids, 11 and Mike are, you know, dating.
Ugh. They were swapping spit.
They're
really
swapping spit
so much.
You have Max from season 2, the sister of Billy, and Lucas, their boyfriend and girlfriend.
They were introduced interracial relationships. I like that.
Yeah. And then you had Dustin coming from camp. They all surprised him at home, coming from his sleepaway camp. I think this is taking place the end of July, so he's been away for about a month of summer, and he's got a girlfriend out in Utah.
Supposedly, nobody knows.
And it starts off with the first time that they're all interacting together. They're basically going to set up a what they call Cerebro, which is a nod, obviously, to comics and X-Men, to establish a satellite so that he can talk to his Susie, who he's bragging about. And he spends all day setting up this ET-like satellite thing for her to connect with signal.
They had cereal back then? Of every sort,
which is great. that was something that they did a lot in the show, just them snacking on boxes of cereal. So that's where they all start off as. And Steve, he works in the shopping mall at the ice cream parlor. He's taken a notch down of his cool status as the guy in high school that everybody thought was the dude to be with. He's now just serving ice cream. And another character is introduced there named Robin, who plays a significant role in the show. And then, like you said, Nancy and Jonathan are working for a newspaper as interns. And Billy, who was the secondary villain, I guess you could say, in season 2, which is Max's brother.
Half stepbrother.
Yeah, something like
that. He's a stepbrother.
Yeah, I don't understand their family dynamic too well, because it's just the two of them.
Where are the parents?
That's what I want to know. He's the hot stud now at the lifeguard at the swimming pool. And that was one part of the show, just as a tangent, that kind of threw me off, was that all of the housewives have the hots for young Billy, the lifeguard, to the point where Mrs. Wheeler, which is Mike and Nancy's mom, is ready to rendezvous with him at a Motel 6.
Ugh.
Which was... I understand how they use that in the plot, because Billy becomes the main antagonist in this season, but I didn't think it needed to be with Mrs. Wheeler.
It didn't need to be her.
I don't think it needed to be her. I know that she played a kind of a key role in the first season. She was in it quite a bit, but in this one I didn't.
Was she though? I don't remember.
She was in it quite a bit, but I didn't care for their use of her this time around. But I could have done without that, because I guess it gives them a little bit of an edge or character development to see where they are in life, but that part of it, I don't know. But hey, for a woman who's had three kids.
Three or four kids.
I think it's three.
It's like she has a litter. I don't know. There's so many kids in this show. I don't know who's the parent of who, like, and where are the parents really? Like, these kids are raising themselves. Like,
right.
They're just off and about. Nobody knows where they are. And
right.
The only, I feel, mother that's involved is Winona Ryder's character, Joyce.
Joyce, yeah.
She's the only one that's in it.
Yes. And police chief Hopper, David Arbor, who is, you know, 11's adoptive father at this point in time. He's having a hard time seeing 11 date Mike. And he's also established, or maybe he's always had them, but he's established feelings for Winona Ryder's character, Joyce, because they've been pretty much heavily involved in every adventure of the town.
But I think they were like childhood friends too, right?
I think so.
High school friends.
They go back.
They have a history.
And I think because they've suffered trauma together at this point, he's got a soft spot for her, and he enjoys her company. So there's like a budding romance potentially there. So I guess that's the setup for all the characters of where they're at.
Yeah, I just went right in. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I enjoy going right into it. I just realized that to kind of see where we're going to tangent off to telling these things, it's kind of good to set up a little bit of groundwork. So from season 2, it ended with, I couldn't even remember the upside down world's villain's name, but the Mind Flayer that was inside of William, who was the main reason everybody got into these adventures in the first place, because he was missing in season 1. But the Mind Flayer took over William in season 2, and whatever was I guess exercised from him in this in season two, it has remained within the real world, a remnant of the main power source of the upside down world. And the Russians are introduced at the very beginning as trying to crack open the breach again. They've established some sort of technology and have even put a laboratory way underground of the shopping mall that everybody's going to. The shopping mall is a cover-up for a Russian science experiment where they're trying to open the breach of the upside-down world. But the problem I have, and maybe we missed it, is they never explain why they were trying to crack open the wall.
Because I think they tried in Russia.
Okay, yeah.
But they failed.
Right.
So they went to the other, because, you know, a door opens two ways, right? Mm-hmm. So they, I think, attempted to go to America and wanted to open the door from there.
Right.
Because they tried in Russia.
Right, and they failed. Didn't work. Yes.
So that's why they took it there.
Right. So the shopping mall plays a very key role in everything that, it's kind of the center of where the story is going to culminate, I guess you could say. So, I guess to summarize, so that we could get into a little bit more of the fun stuff of it, Eleven and Max...
Which, hold on, I have a question.
Yes.
Because wasn't Eleven originally used to... They were trying to make her a weapon against the Russians.
Exactly, exactly.
So I'm just trying to understand... Okay, these are questions that I have, and I'm going to start right now.
Yeah.
Okay? Questions that I have. In season one, the main villain, besides the Whitehead doctor, Dr. Brennan or Burner...
Okay, yeah.
Okay?
Papa,
was right. The Demogorgon. He was the main
he
monster.
He was the main monster, yeah.
In season two, the main monster was like the
Mind Flayer.
The dusty Mind Flayer that overtook Will.
Right. And then there were all these little like raptor dog Demogorgon things that were breaching the reality.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then in season three, it was what was introduced at the post credits of season two. This overseeing tarantula like looking thing.
That was focused on where Eleven was.
Correct. Well, it was overseeing the school at the end of the post credits, but then that's the main monster in this movie. However, the Russians or whoever is trying to open the gate, and there's this slimy little thing trying to come and make its way out. So, from the monster perspective, I'm trying to understand who's the main who's the bad guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like all the stories kind of intertwine, but they've branched off to their own story.
Right.
So I'm not sure if they're interconnected or are they telling a new angle.
A new monster altogether.
Yes.
I think it's a remnant of the Mind Flayer and the main
And I know he said that, but what does that mean? Is this like a minion of the main monster behind the portal?
I don't know. That I don't know.
Is it an extension of the monster?
I think it's an extension of. I think so.
But then it's an extension of the Demogorgon?
I don't think it's an extension of the Demogorgon.
Because Elle killed the Demogorgon in season one.
Right. Right.
But she was stuck in the upside down.
Yes.
But then she came out of the vagina-looking portal. That's exactly what it looked like.
Yes,
it's like she
gave birth.
It was
to
like
it.
A birth canal
situation.
Where she put her hand through it and she came out all slimy.
Right.
Let's just call a spade a spade.
Spade is a spade.
So I'm just confused as to who the actual villain is.
I think it's Mind Flayer. It's the Mind Flayer, not
and
a Demogorgon.
And who is that?
I think it's that huge tarantula.
The thing
tarantula.
Behind the wall.
Yes, the huge tarantula-looking thing.
No, the tarantula thing was the thing in the movie. I mean, in season three.
In season two. Season two, you see it over where the kids are at the end. Where
that's not the thing that was in season three?
It is this thing in season three. It's the same thing.
Yeah, but who's behind the portal?
I think it's a remnant of the Mind Slayer that had remained in the main world from Will. When it exited Will, it had stayed around there. And then when they tried to crack open that portal, it reinvigorated again. So, the thing
okay,
with the...
I need to understand. Everybody please be patient. And I'm actually looking at the microphone. Like these people
it's a camera.
there's three monsters that I know of. The Demogorgon season one.
Yeah.
In season two, it's the dusty thing.
Mind Flayer.
Right?
Mind Flayer, yeah.
And in season three, it's the tarantula-looking thing.
I think the tarantula-looking thing is a Mind Flayer.
So it is part two, just in formation. Because of the rats and people, it took...
To form it.
It took epidermises of living organisms.
And bones and everything.
In this realm to become something.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So there's actually two monsters.
I think so.
And one works for the other, or the one is an extension of the other?
I think that, if I understand correctly, the main huge Mind Flayer has like smaller versions of itself.
Which is where the dogs came from.
Right. So I think to sum it up, because I get confused as you do with this Mind Flayer business, I think it needs a host in the main world. And in this season, its host was Billy. But in order for it to form into a tangible monster for them to destroy, Billy was recruiting other people, and there was like a plasma that it would infest other hosts or carriers of the virus, I guess you could say. And when people came in contact with it, they all became part of the Mind Flayer. But Billy was the main host. Like, they were connected to the point where whatever the Mind Flayer felt, Billy would feel, and vice versa. They were almost one and the same in that way. So he starts going on a mission collecting people.
Mm-hmm.
He starts with another lifeguard at the pool that he works at, and then as the show goes on, you see other people who've been collected, and it's pretty much doom and gloom for them. There isn't really much hope once they join the
or the Mind Flayer activates them.
Calls them all over
his use.
Exactly. And it's quite terrifying. Like, it's like the Demogorgon mixed with the Blob.
Yes.
Mixed with...
That's exactly...
Critters. Yeah. Mixed with everything you can imagine. But it's like a huge tarantula.
It was like all of your horror movies...
Yeah.
...into one.
Yeah. It definitely borrows
these
from that.
Duffer Brothers are sick.
Yeah. And each movie, or each season, uses something that they reference at the beginning of the show. So in season one, they're playing Dungeons and Dragons, and the show becomes very much like a Dungeons and Dragons mission. In season two, it's the video game that they play at the arcade that becomes kind of like the premise for the rest of the season. And in this one, they went to the movies and they watched Day of the Dead or something like that, like some sort of zombie movie.
Also Back to the Future.
Also Back to the Future is referenced as well heavily. So all of those things become a part of the storyline and plot. What did you think of Billy? Like, I don't like that character from season
Who's
two.
Billy?
Billy
oh.
is the...
Oh, he's a schmuck.
Yeah, right?
Oh, he's so slimy and gross.
He's slimy, yeah.
Yeah.
He's the right guy to play the
And
villain.
I'm sorry, nobody showers with their hair in front of their face. There's always that natural get it out of the way.
But that was when he was a host, right?
Doesn't matter, I'm just saying. It just doesn't happen. Even, let me tell you something, even if I was possessed, I would know better. Mm-hmm. I would know to get my hair out of my face, because you just can't function like that. There's no way.
It's true.
I'm
it's
just
true.
Saying.
No,
it's
you're right.
It's itchy, it's inconvenient, how do you see? It doesn't make any sense to me.
I like the things you take note of when you watch the television shows.
It's
the,
just
the,
such
the
a
problems
bother.
You have.
It's such a bother.
The plot hole.
Yeah.
What was the most scary moment for you? Which was the thing that made you jump the most? Was there a specific side, because they're all like side plots, right, that eventually converge. So which was the one that kind of gave you the creeps the most?
Gave me the creeps the most?
Mm-hmm.
Because there were so many different story angles. I want to answer your question. Obviously, it always has to come down to the monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, always the monster. I think the scariest thing was when he would, like, suck.
The face off?
Or insert himself into people. It looked like a integrating of...
Yeah.
Of his victims, where he would put his tentacles on a victim's face, And I thought at first he was, like, sucking the life out of him, but I think it was the...
opposite.
The opposite. And then they just became his, like, minions.
Right.
It was gross.
I think when Billy was the first victim of it, when his car gets sideswiped out of nowhere, and he becomes entrapped by the Mind Flayer in the first episode, when he's on his way to the Motel 6 to meet up with
Mrs. Wheeler,
he never gets there. I guess it was a good lesson in saying, don't take part in those extramarital activities. You're just going to get yourself into problems. Either a Mind Flayer is going to get you, your car is going to get run over, or you're just going to have problems. But on his way to that rendezvous, he got himself into some trouble.
I thought there was a lot of undertone messages going on, especially, I guess, because of this whole, like, woman movement that's been going on lately.
Yeah.
I remember kind of stopping the episodes in mid-watch.
Yeah, you did. We had a little discussion.
To you, what the heck? Like, this is taught. This has always been the situation where they think that women need shop therapy to get over a guy, or that the man has to, you know, woo the woman back with jewelry. And that's just, or the simple fact that women weren't respected in the workplace. They were, you know, what's the word? Not sexified, but we're in a way, kind of.
Misogynistically viewed.
Right, and then women had to take it. And the simple fact that at that time, you couldn't use your voice. You just kind of had to... If you weren't seen one way, you were seen another.
Right.
And I just thought it was... They were trying to... They made a commentary on what the time was then. And I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I think sometimes they used it well. And then there were other times where they tried to insert certain subtle messages or inclusion that was kind of like, it doesn't do anything for the story. There's nothing.
It was just a commentary.
It was just extra that they put in there to have like subliminal messages.
But did you think it added value to the story?
No, not at all. Some of them did, because the reason, like, for instance, Nancy being around misogynistic men in the mid-80s and not really having a voice or being respected or just being looked at like, you go get coffee when we need you to do something, we'll let you know. That adds to the story, because her character development is locked into, like, people don't think I can. I'll show them that I can.
Mm-hmm.
And she's always been, from the first season, kind of like that go-getter or that hero that what's the word? That unlikely hero.
Mm-hmm.
So it builds her character. So her being...
That was already introduced with Eleven's character.
Right.
She's a female. She had these superpowers.
Right.
That everyone perhaps didn't understand or underestimated. But
right.
When she meant business...
Right.
She could flip a car over.
Exactly.
In slow motion.
Right. So all of those things that are established, they're good things to overcome for the characters. So I think it's good to use those things to your advantage in the storytelling. But when you try to introduce other things that don't make any difference whatsoever in the character's development or how they're being used, it's just to have it there to make sure that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm kind of like, okay, I guess if that's what you need, if you feel you need to do that, but you don't really need to, it's just sort of like, it's like Mrs. Wheeler being used in that way, or making reference to the fact that Will doesn't like girls.
Well, we don't know that for sure.
Well, it's referenced, right?
Right.
Because all of the boys have girlfriends. He's the one that wants to still play Dungeons
and
Dragons.
Yeah, but the way I saw it is that I feel like, because he was always the one that we can, let's play, let's get together, let's start this, let's start that. I think it's because he felt that he lost a part of his innocence.
And he's
trying to regain that. He has seen the ugly side of something or missed out on that and wanted to regain his innocence. And that's how I...
And I think that is a more useful way of him feeling how he feels. Excuse me, but the way it's referenced between him and Mike is that he doesn't have interest in girls at all, while his other friends do.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Right? So it's just one of those things that whether or not he does end up being
I don't think within that time, though, that was even assumed. It was just, I'm blooming a little bit earlier or later than the next person. It's like girls getting boobs before the next person.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? There's just different stages. There's different...
And I think with that, with you saying that, I think it's important to, whenever you're telling a story in a certain era, you have to also, I think, work with... And I know this is all fiction. It's all fake. It's all storytelling. But you in order to... As much as this is a ridiculous story of a little town of monsters and otherworldly things happening, you stick with, that's what the world was like back then. And that's what brings you into it or makes you emotionally charged for the character's rights or whatever it is they're experiencing. Do you know what I mean? Like, back then, going to the mall and having fun is what people did. That's how they interacted. Nowadays, not so much. So if you're telling a story of today's era, using the mall as your centerpiece wouldn't work quite the same as some other form of entertainment that kids use today. Do you know what I mean? Like, going to Starbucks becomes more of the
thing
that
people do. But that's why I think that logic doesn't exactly work. I don't think Mike was alluding to that because, A, they were just already discovering their bodily changes in puberty and all of this other stuff. To think outside of something that was perhaps at that time not accepted or even heard of, I don't think that was what he was alluding to. I think we allude to that because of the world, the time that we live
in. You're right. And I think that the way that television and all sorts of entertainment now, it's like we have to include that. We have to make sure that that's there.
It's a possibility. Well, they did do that.
They did do that,
but I don't think it was necessarily from the... Why do I want to call him Sam? Will and Mike situation. Mm. I don't think so. I think it was just them trying to... The way I saw it was him just trying to regain his innocence and stay within that... I don't know. Which, on the other hand, I get confused with, if this was so traumatizing, why would you want to keep watching these scary movies and going on these scary adventures or entertaining the idea of being chased by a monster?
Dungeons and Dragons is more real than you think, and you keep wanting to play it.
Right. That being said, Will always played or wanted to play the role of the hero. Like, he's Will the Wise. He has wizard powers. He can overcome the monster. And so he will, you know, he'll win. He'll survive. And I don't know if that had, like, a
subliminal
message as to, like, the fact that we can do this. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of undertones.
Yeah, I think there were.
More so in this season than in the other, the previous ones. I don't know.
Maybe we were more attentive to it.
Yeah.
So, which side adventure intrigued you the most? Which one did you want to catch up with? So, you had the one where Max and Eleven are investigating what happened to Billy. And then the boys realize that the Mind Flayer is back. Will lets them know that he's gotten the feeling that the Mind Flayer is back. So the five of them team up. Lucas, Mike, Will, Max, and Eleven become their own little team on their own adventure, trying to stop Billy. Then you've got Steve and Dustin, Robin, and Erica, who are trying to infiltrate the Russian base. They've cracked the code, realizing that there's a Russian base in the town, and they want to be American heroes. And then you've got, of course, Hopper and Joyce, as well as Barry, who are trying to figure out what is up with... they're being chased by some sort of Russian assassin because they've cracked...
A Russian Terminator.
A Russian Terminator, basically, because they've cracked the... Not cracked the code, but have realized that there is some sort of mechanism in the town that is ruining the magnetic field. All of the magnets on people's fridges and normal behavior of science is being disrupted by something. So Joyce is sure that the laboratory from season one is back. There's something happening. And they run into this whole runaway conspiracy thing as well that introduces the character Barry, who is conveniently a Russian translator. And they're on their own little mission. So which one was the one that had you most at, like, when it came back up on the screen that you were, or was it all of them? Because I feel like, I think you feel like you need to follow all of them to try to put the pieces together to what's happening.
I liked, it was all of them, but if I had to choose one, I think the Scoop Troop.
The Scoop Troop?
Was my most intriguing, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
I think I might
I mean, the, what are they called? The something family? I forget what they're called. But the, like, with Lucas and Eleven and Max. And,
oh, Griswolds.
Yes. They were intriguing because there they got their superpower person.
Right.
Right? So you see all the action happening.
Yeah.
And the angry screaming and ripping apart of Tarantula's monster-looking things. But I liked the dynamic and new introduction of characters. So Erica and Robin and the breaking down of clues and deducing and problem solving and the working together of team members.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun for me.
Yes, I agree.
Oh, yeah?
I thought so too, because there was a lot more unknowns, because you've kind of seen Eleven and her pack of friends use the powers. Although I was still very much enthralled by that little journey of running away, running to, figuring out what was happening. But it was the complete unknown of what the Russians were up to.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing these four, essentially these four kids, two of them older, two of them younger, how the heck are they going to manage? Right? Like, what do they have? Nothing, no real resources. Two of them work in the ice cream shop at mm-hmm. the mall.
One of them is like, five.
Well, yeah, one of them.
It's established that she's 10 years old, but she's beyond her years.
She's, yeah, totally beyond
her dialogue years. And delivery was on point.
She's almost the smartest of them all, yeah. Which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And, of course, Dustin, being Dustin, I always love Dustin.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite characters in the whole show. So seeing how they would get in and out of trouble
mm-hmm.
was like, how are they going to get out of this thing? Because you realize that there's this bunker underneath the mall that is feels like 1,000 feet deep
mm-hmm.
and they got nothing to
do. It really was though.
Yeah, it really was. So it was one of those I guess new plot twists to the show that you hadn't seen yet.
I have a question for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
How much of that stuff do you think is real?
Oh, I think it's pretty real.
That like at the base of Yorkdale Mall there's something fishy going on.
I don't know about that. About, like, malls in general, but I feel
or like specific landmarks here in the city of Toronto. Like, how much is it kept from the public? Or the simple fact that things are going down, but they're not really informing the citizens of the world of these close call, covert, you know.
I think there's a lot more of that than we think.
Or nothing.
I think there's more of that than we think.
Yeah?
Yeah, I definitely do. Because there's that's the only reason why people who do become whistleblowers, there's an attack on them. Whenever someone becomes a whistleblower, they run away to another country, they do a whole sort of smear campaign on them to discredit them. People go way out of their way to discredit, like, they're crazy. Don't listen to anything they're saying. And I feel like the reason for it is because there's got to be something that they've exposed that if the public believe it, the majority of the public believe it, panic.
And chaos would,
yeah, exactly. So it's keeping things...
So ignorance is bliss.
Totally. 100%. Because the more...
Would you want to know if something was happening? Or do you prefer to be... Would you take the red pill or the blue pill kind of thing?
I ask myself that question all the time. Because out of sight, out of mind, right? And when you... We're going on a tangent here. But it's
that's the conversation.
That's what makes our conversations interesting. I was thinking about that because I listen to a lot of other podcasts where people are telling you or informing you, here's what's happening on this side of the world. The reason why they're acting out on this way is because of something that has happened on our side of the world that we're influencing. So as much as they're being presented as a threat and an enemy and blase, blase, we're actually the threat to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're reacting to it. So we're over here living our cushy life, thinking whatever we want to think. Here's really what's happening. We're not doing anything about it. And I'm kind of like, it's hard to want to think of the world in the way of kids being afraid to go to school because gunshots and bombs are going off around them, when over here I'm worried about the traffic on the closest highway to me, which is my problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, do I really want to have my mind focused on what's happening there? Or am I going to be grateful for the fact that I don't live there? Like, what makes me, you know, what responsibility do I have as a human being? Should I be grateful for the fact that I have what I have? Or should I be feel guilty because I'm not doing something to help these people?
Yeah.
You know? So I always struggle kind of with that sort of, with that dichotomy of, morale.
Right.
What about you? Red pill, blue pill?
Which one is the red pill? Which one's the blue pill?
I think the red pill is the one that lets you know what's happening.
And the blue pill is?
Bliss. Ignorance. Ignorance, not bliss. It all depends on what you consider bliss.
I don't know. I hate to say this. I think I'd take the blue pill.
Most people would.
And not because, well, of course I'm going to defend my decision. But I think there's such ugly things in the world. I just rather not. Only because it angers me so much. And it angers me because I can't do anything about it.
And I think not everybody is fit for the red pill. And I don't think everyone should take the blue pill. I think you need some people to be on both sides of it.
But then how do you progress from that? How do you advance forward thinking?
I think it starts with you being aware of where you stand yourself. You got to be self-aware, first of all, before you think. Because a lot of times when people are so knowledgeable about everything else that's happening and every conspiracy that's happening, they don't reflect on themselves. Do you know what I mean?
I think there needs to be a balance, but like I said, I think what angers me most is not only what's happening in the world, but just knowing that you're powerless to do anything about it.
That too.
And so it's that like, too. Well, what do I do? Do I just get, you know, let this gloom and doom engulf me? Or do I just go through life not worrying about it and just, I don't know. It just seems like either or is not a good choice.
No, you're right. And
you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Why are we alive? Why are we here?
That's what Stranger Things makes you think of, right? Makes you ask the egg.
Because the town is so oblivious to what's happening.
And only a few people know.
And the people that do know are like to the minute, to the second.
Trying to protect the town.
Heaving this, you know, last minute survival thing and rushing and running and exhausting themselves and bleeding and like getting injected with truth serums and poison and just like going through hell. And then everybody else just going to the fair and riding their bikes.
And I think that's what you need, right? Is that you need those people.
And they get their eye candy and they're just living life and embracing it. And which one is the one to go with? I don't know.
I think you need to have the people who know what's going on and protect and solve the problem so that everybody else can still enjoy their life. I think you need that. You need people who are just going to go to work and
but
make sure.
It's not fair. It's not fair for the people to know, to be in the know, to have to bear all of this burden so that someone else can just walk around ignorantly and think.
That's what a hero is, though. That's what a superhero does. That's what a hero does. That's what a person in the army does in order for other people. That's why.
They self-sacrifice.
That's a self-sacrifice
for the greater good.
Right? And not everybody. Everyone's got to self-sacrifice to an extent, some more than others. I think what it all comes down to, in my opinion, in that keyword, my opinion, is we all do our part as individuals to say, what can I do in a small way to make things better?
But you have to be aware of something in order to do something.
You got
to
be aware of something in order. But the best sometimes you can do is make sure you pay your fare. Make sure you are polite. Make sure you do recycle. Make sure you don't, you know, overeat or contribute to the problem, such as, like, let's say, factory farming.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you shut your car off when you don't need to have it run. Like, all these little things that you can do to the best of your ability to contribute.
It goes a long way.
It goes a long way.
It seems small, but exactly. It does something.
So you
or you use stainless steel straws instead of plastic.
Something, whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you've done something.
I think we need to eradicate plastic from this world, by the way. Just a side point. A PSA.
On our Stranger Things episode, this has become an environmental issue. But yeah, I think you, the key is what you do know about.
Just becoming self-aware makes a big difference.
And on the other end of it, just because you do know, I don't think you have to tell everybody else what they don't know.
But that's why self-awareness. It's not about pointing the finger or making other people feel guilty for the decisions that they make. It's
right.
It's more just what can you do?
What can you do?
What can I do?
Right. And exactly. For some people, they feel... what I have to do, and here I'm going to try to tie it back into Stranger Things, is...
Bring us back.
Try to, right? Is just because you know that the town has had these conspiracies take place in it, we don't have to tell everybody in the town about it.
But that makes me think, well, if Joyce's magnets at home and at work were not working, then... other people of the community should have also had magnets that weren't working. So how does that not contribute to, hey, you know, Maribel, how are your magnets doing? Like, how do people not become aware of the strange things that are happening and don't communicate with each other?
They probably do, and then that's where the conspiracy theories are created. Oh, it's an alien. Oh, it's this. Oh,
it's the Russians.
It's whatever. They come up, and all of them are debunked because they're all different. They're all just conspiracy theories.
Or they're too ashamed to bring it to light, and so they just say, let's just keep it to ourselves.
Right, right. Or they're so mundane, it's like, oh, the magnets don't work. These magnets are garbage.
Right.
Right?
Very well could be, right? Some people in those times, and still, I think... can easily dismiss
totally
certain stuff.
And you didn't have internet back then.
True.
Whatever you got was on the 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock.
The local news from the
right?
local paper.
That's it. That's what you got. So your information was a little slower. So, getting back to the Stranger Things, is all of the kids that are in the little group, they don't gotta go to school and tell everybody what's going on. First of all, no one will believe them.
Right.
And you're gonna freak out everybody and send them into a panic. To scare them. For what? So that they're all in the know. Sometimes we feel that. Like, I gotta tell everybody because I know, so everyone else has to know what I know, and now I've done you all a service.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think necessarily that's how everyone should be introduced.
I don't think those people are likable, actually.
No, and I think you encounter a lot of those kind of people in life that become...
the know-it-alls.
In anything.
Yeah.
Whether it's political, whether it's environmental, whether it's
veganism. Not that I'm against vegans, but like, you know, when they make you feel bad for every decision you make, it's like, hey homie,
I'm gonna
take
have
it
this bagel,
easy,
relax.
I'll just, you know, okay, yeah, yeah, I get yeah. it. I get
I,
your
I was
perspective.
Gonna say nutrition,
okay,
you know, nutritionist.
Sure. Sorry, yeah, that's a little bit more general.
Whatever the case may be.
And I'm totally for it.
Religious
I'm just saying
people, all the same.
There's two sides to every
Absolutely.
Story. There's two sides to a coin.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, to like, if everything's always one-sided, you can't get far.
Right, right. I think, yeah. Interesting.
Bring us back. Yeah. I took us off the side.
No, it's good. It makes the... That's the point, I think, though. Like, you're entertained by stuff, but within the entertainment, it makes you ask questions socially. It makes you ask questions, like, internally. Like, that's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When you just watch something and it's like, meh, whatever. Throw it away. Like a Fast and the Furious.
What nostalgic things did you like about this movie? Now that you brought up Back to the...
I loved the idea of Back to the Future in the theater.
Yeah.
Because I never got to experience that.
Because you were just a tot.
You
were a little thing.
I was a fart in a mitt. So I didn't... That was cool to see the movie poster and people going to watch it and the reaction they would have had back then. That was neat.
You know what I thought was cool?
What's that?
Everybody knows I don't like clowns.
Yeah.
I don't like fairs because of clowns. That whole, like... what's it called? Like warped mirror kind of room.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah,
like
yeah,
those
yeah.
stuff. However, I do remember going to certain places like that, and they had that that whipping, that turnstile thing where it goes so fast that the vortex pulls you into the
gyroscope or whatever, that ride.
Yeah. I remember those. It was very, actually, it was really cool watching this season because even though I was just a year and a half old.
But those things
stuff lasted enough for me to actually see and experience. I remember what it was to have a tape deck.
Right.
I remember what it was to wear those over-colored, oversized tops and suspenders with shorts. I did that. That was me. And I remember, you know, having a scrunchie in my hair. It was just so nostalgic and so cool. And to be like, you know what, we look crazy, but that was so cool back then.
Yeah.
Like, people looked like they were happy and they were having fun. It was very colorful.
Yes.
It was very busy. Yes. Everything was exciting.
I still do. I can't lie. But as a kid, I loved going to the mall because you would see that would be, toys were there, books were there. You'd find like a card, like hockey card stores, comic book pop-up shops at the time, because Batman 89, we should do a Batman 89 episode, but a Batman 89 was very popular. So there were like all these things that you'd go to the mall and you never knew what you might do that day. You might go watch a movie, and seeing them at the mall getting ice cream and the food court and like the fountain in the middle. I miss malls like that, those two-level malls that were filled with anything.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now it's so much more like, you've got your wing of the mall that is more expensive.
It's ritzy.
Yeah, like it's...
And uppity.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got the other side where it's like bargain type.
Yeah, it's true. Like, you can't go... You don't go to the...
I didn't know that. I didn't know that mall... Well, at least today. Maybe they had them always.
Maybe they did.
But today,
They got tiers.
They have tiers.
Yeah.
Or they have sections.
Yeah.
Apparently, I didn't know this, but in the Eaton Center here in Toronto, the third floor...
Yeah.
The top floor is the ritzy all-name brand shops.
More expensive.
The lower you go...
It's more affordable.
It's more... Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a tier system.
Sure.
At Yorkdale Shopping Center,
you got your wings.
There's like a whole wing where it's like, it's quiet, it smells different.
Yeah.
Like, it's so like perfumed and and sterile and bright and clean and just separate from the other shops where it's like, oh, you common people. You know what I mean? It's just, what the hell?
Watching this movie made me think of like Woodbine Center.
Mm-hmm.
And Promenade Mall back in the early 90s, mid 90s, where those malls were still nice.
Right.
And like, you went there to watch a movie, buy a baseball hat, you know, find a record store, like you had, and there was an arcade.
Yeah.
Like, it was a place where you did stuff when you were there. Now that kind of is gone.
Yeah.
But I miss
that. Is it
that.
Gone, or is it just we don't do it?
No, it's no longer at the malls, but you do it, you have it in your pocket.
True.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't need to go there and pay 25 cents to play Street Fighter. You buy the Street Fighter app. Or you play it on your new small Nintendo system that has 150 games, right? Like, everything is now conveniently, you do it at home. You don't got to leave your house. Whereas before, it was like, let's ride our bikes to the mall to watch a movie, and then we'll play at the arcade. Now it's like, come over to my house. Don't even ride your bike. Right?
Yeah.
And we'll watch Netflix and then play video games.
On our phones.
On our phones.
Because you can.
And then we
now.
Won't talk to each other while we're doing all of those things.
Yeah.
So that
do
was...
Do you miss those times?
I do. I miss them a lot.
So why don't you reenact them?
I do. I go into the city all the time. Or when I like going to New York City, I walk the whole city, and it's like the whole city.
See, but you do that because you're not
mall.
There all the time. Do you do that? You should probably do that here.
I do. I go to the comic shop.
I mean, I still have board games. I love board games.
Yeah, when people come over, we play board games.
But I wonder if it's because that's our era, and it's nostalgic for us.
I still like going to the movies. Do you like going to the movies?
I like going to the movies. I just don't like going to the movies with other people.
So you like watching Netflix.
Yeah.
So, getting back to Stranger Things.
Did we do that again?
Yeah,
we took a hard turn.
We took a hard turn. We went underground. Where were we now? So, the culmination of the story is everyone ends up meeting at the Star... What was it called? Not Star Labs. It was Star Court Mall. Star Court Mall was what it was called. They all end up meeting there. And
they all find out that they're actually going after the same thing.
Same thing. Yeah. Right. So Hopper, Joyce, and Barry are, they're now trying to infiltrate the Russian underground lab that Dustin and Steve found.
Which they understand now is the key to close the gate to keep the monster from coming.
They got to destroy that gate in order to, because the monster and the gate are connected. If you close the gate, the monster is destroyed. So that's their mission.
Is it destroyed or contained?
It's killed. It's killed.
I don't know if it's killed, bud.
You don't know, but you're right. We don't know. We don't know exactly, but the mission is to destroy the key. The gate closes again. The monster loses all its power, and that's done. And then at the same time...
Well, the monster on this side of the world...
On this side of it is done.
Is done.
Right.
But not the main guy.
We don't know. I don't really know. I can't answer that question for you because I'm as confused as you are in that regard.
Okay.
And then you've got Eleven and her group of friends who they need to keep Eleven away from the monster because the monster is
out
to get her.
Now knows who she is.
Yeah, he's got a vendetta against her because she closed the gate the first time.
Yeah, he doesn't like her very much.
Yeah, he's got to take her out and then he could do whatever he wants, wreaking havoc.
And he kind of did.
Right.
She's a little powerless now.
She's a little powerless, yeah. She's lost her spidey sense, if you will. And then Dustin now goes to his cerebral center with Erica, and they're using that as like a place to communicate with everybody, walkie-talkie, activate the satellite they built, and everyone's got a stronger signal on the satellite.
Yeah.
It ends up where they have a huge battle at the mall with the Beastie.
Mm-hmm.
With the Mind Flayer.
Which I liked.
That was a cool one.
Liked that battle scene.
That
was
really
colorful.
Good. It was. Because it's the 4th of July.
Yeah.
So they're using fireworks that they've collected. And the thing to know is with the Mind Flayer, it really, it needs to be, it gets strength from being in colder environments. You add a lot of heat to it, put it to fire, put it in a sauna, just up the temperature in its surroundings, and it loses all its power.
It
doesn't like it. So it's always surrounding, it's always trying to keep itself cool. So throwing the fireworks on the 4th of July, trying to blow this thing up or heat it up, was a really cool scene. Because like you said, it was super colorful.
Do you find that this show, or whatever this is, this series, is very reminiscent of Super 8?
I think if you like Stranger Things, you'll like Super 8. Definitely. For sure. Everything about it is like one, like the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. This one has a little bit more of, I would say...
Horror? Yeah. The other one had a little heart.
This one does too?
No. I mean, in the sense of, like, the monster isn't the monster.
Right. Exactly.
It's not what you think it is.
Right.
It takes a little turn. It's
It has a little bit more of, like, Super 8's a little bit more of, like, a horrific E.T.
Yeah.
Whereas this one is just, like, monster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so going back to the show, they have the huge showdown at the mall. The kids are trying to stop it. Steve comes in and kind of saves the day in a way, preventing Barry from hurting them with his vehicle. He comes through at the last minute. The mall, the fireworks are going off in the mall. While at the same time, you've got Hopper, Joyce, and Barry infiltrating the Russian base, dressed up in their Russian soldier garb. And trying to get to the key. When it's all said and done, Joyce is able to turn on both keys, but in so doing, Hopper, who was fighting the Terminator-esque Russian guy who's been chasing them the whole show, he's very close to the key. And the thing, the caveat was, whenever the key is disturbed or shut down abruptly, everybody around them disintegrates as well. So it's very, you got to be away from it or separated from the room that it's in. Whereas Hopper and the Terminator fella, are fighting right in front of the key, basically who's going to get thrown into it.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to lose the fight by getting punched into the actual machine and being, you know, ripped apart to pieces. So Joyce has to turn the keys when Hopper is within the vicinity of it. So the show ends with the understanding that Hopper is gone. What did you think of that?
I was disappointed because they showed everyone else in that vicinity in their special suits being like mystified, so you can't help but assume
he's gone.
That Hopper got the same
ending.
He got the axe, right?
Yeah.
That being said, there's a couple of ideas that you can't help but think, because he's such a main character. How can he just be lost like that, right?
Right.
So I'd like to think that he is elsewhere.
Okay.
So there's apparently how do I say it?
Theory?
There's a couple of theories out there that I came across.
Tell me.
One of them is that whole 3 inches when he was telling Eleven while she was dating Mike, he's like, keep the door open 3 inches. Keep the door at 3 inches. There could be a possibility that he didn't know where to go, and his only escape was to go into the upside down. So to go in through the open portal that the machine was trying to open, and he went in through there, because remember when Eleven went into it to kill the Demogorgon in season 1, she made her way out of the upside down through the same portal.
I follow.
So there's that theory. Mm-hmm. And it could be either going through that portal, he ended up in Russia, because in the post credits they allude that there's an American in prison, or right. as prisoner being right. held as prisoner
right.
So it could be him. However, another American could be Dr. Brenner or Papa. Is it Brenner?
But he died.
No, because in season 2, when Eleven goes off with her sisters of like supernatural
right.
children, they come across a nurse that at that time was in cahoots with the whole experiment operation, and they question him, and she's like, no, Papa's dead. He's like, no, he's alive. So it could also be that the American that they're referring to could be
Brenner.
Could be Brenner.
Who's maybe he informed them about the upside down.
It's a possibility.
There you go.
The other theory is that when they, and I didn't realize this, when Joyce is turning the key, there's a point where she looks down, right? Because she can't bear the thought of what's going to happen to Hopper. So, and then from that angle, or from that point of view, they focus on the key turning. And so in that whole time of her looking away and her debating whether she needs to turn the key, he could have had a moment of escaping, either jumping off of wherever he was
platform.
And going through the doors that right. her and Barry went through.
That's
but
what
at
I
the,
was thinking.
But at that time, perhaps he was probably infiltrated by Russians who took him captive.
That's what I was thinking.
And that's how he ended up in Russia. There go alluding to him being the American that's under...
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Who's captive. And also, had he gone through the portal... This is my theory.
Yeah.
If he's gone through the portal, because there's a lot of Back to the Future reference, what if he goes back in time, going through to Russia, right? And that, if you notice, that Demogorgon in the post credits, he looks a little new.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little shiny and slimy.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't really have his full.
He looks like a puppy.
He looks like a puppy. He doesn't have like that.
Not
that,
small, but that, he's not worn
well,
out.
Well, he doesn't have that outer exterior, that yeah. hard exterior. He's still
looks
kind
like
of
it
like
looks fresh.
It looks like it just became.
Right.
So they're feeding it.
Yeah.
So it's a possibility that perhaps he's back in time. And that's where he is now. Before, and that's why we're being reintroduced to the Demogorgon. Because the Demogorgon was the main monster in season 1.
Interesting.
Also, yeah, I think you said it, how Brenner told them about the whole, like, portal and everything, because he was there to begin with.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the idea is, I hope...
He's not dead.
He's not dead.
No, I don't think he's dead.
I don't think... In the beginning, at the very second, I'm like, oh, damn, that's not... I don't... That's not cool. Why would they kill off a main character just like that? But there's a possibility. He's somewhere out there.
Are you really singing right now? which you doing that makes me remember my favorite scene in the show. And the culmination of everything is Dustin and Susie.
Who's a real person?
She's a real person. They are on the walkie-talkie communicating, and they end up singing the theme song to Never Ending Story.
You just gotta
see it to know what we're talking about. It was fantastic. It was so good. I guess my last question would be, if they didn't have the post-credit scene in this last episode alluding to more, would you be okay if this was the end of Stranger Things? I think 3 seasons, the way they did it, I'd be good with it. 24 episodes telling this story.
If Hopper didn't die, yeah. Or if they didn't allude to his death.
But even if he died, the way he died a heroic death, the letter he leaves behind that Eleven reads, they move away, Eleven's with the Breyer family, and, you know, it's sad, but it's moving. They've helped each other. Everyone's still... they're still together, even though they've had to split apart. Like, I feel like it's a good way to close the loop.
I mean, I think at some point they do need to cut it, because any good thing that's overdone loses its...
Yeah.
Its oomph.
Yeah. I think so, too.
So, no, but... but I say that knowing that there's more.
Yeah, I feel like, for me, after season 3 of any series, you get the sweet spot of, now we end it. Like, right after this, now you end it.
Yeah.
Because season 3, not to say to me, not in my opinion, that season 3 of Stranger Things is the best, but it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It was very good when it was all said and done. I enjoyed it.
It took a while to get going, though. I feel like a lot happened in the last 2 episodes.
Yes, but even episode 3 and 4...
everything was build up.
Episode 3 and 4 was pretty big. It was a good point in the show where things switched on and you were on your way. Episode 3 and 4 of season 3, there's a lot of information packed in those episodes. But I feel like season 1 to me is still the best, because it made me fall in love with the characters and the story's a little bit more simple. You know what the goal is. But I don't want it to get to the point where we're like, how much bigger can you get? How much more can you do?
How much more is there before we get tired of it?
Right.
Okay, well, I think they're smart. The Duffer brothers are smart about this, because the fact that they had Eleven lose her powers, that was a good...
twist.
That was a good twist. Because had she not, it would have just been a reiteration of the ending of season 2, where she used her powers to close the gate.
Right.
She was their weapon of choice, or their only weapon to take down the monster.
Right.
Had they done it again, it just would have been like, we've seen this already.
Right.
But they took another route, if you will, to give a different perspective or tell another story. So even though it can seem repetitive, I think they're being smart about how they execute their storytelling.
Yeah, I think so too. I just
they're exploring different avenues.
Yeah. I don't know myself, but I feel like the max you can do, max is 5 seasons.
It's not an even number, though.
Neither is 3.
Yeah, but Okay, all right.
I feel like if you get into season 6, now you're treading on, like, there's nowhere. And now it's just going to get ridiculous. Now we're in the 90s. Right? So, I don't know. So, what would you give this season a rating?
Oh, I don't know.
I'd give it a 8.
Okay.
How about you?
Sure.
8?
Same thing, I guess.
Same thing?
Maybe a 7.5. It took me a while to get into it. They were taking too long.
I felt by episode 3 and 4, it gets going. Like, you can't stop at that point. I thought it was well paced. The first 2 episodes was a little bit of like, okay, what's happening? Because
yeah,
you're
but even
a
up
lot.
Until they got to the mall and got together and told each other what was happening, no one really knew what was happening.
And that's the thing, is you don't know, they don't know. So it's not like you've missed something. It's just part of the journey.
True
you're
enough,
on it with them.
But you feel like as the person viewer. Looking in, you're supposed to know a little bit something. You know, you're supposed to know a little something. Like, we knew Billy was the bad guy who was infiltrated by the Mind Flayer, right? We knew that. And yet all this time, they thought Billy was just being Billy, but he was, like, off.
Right.
You know? Or the fact that Heather was missing, but she was actually okay. Like, you, as the observer, know a little bit more. And I felt that it took even us a while to figure out who's really the enemy here.
Yeah.
It just took a while for me.
Yeah, it's true. Maybe season four, you'll have a lot of those questions answered. Exactly what were the Russians up to?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Well, that's Stranger Things 3. Thank you, Daft J. And thank you for the tangent that we went on talking about life.
Is that what that was?
Yeah. Huh. We do that all the time. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. You can email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Eric Anthony. You can follow Cave of Solitude. Follow us on Instagram. And leave us a review on iTunes. Daft J, it's been a blast.
Okay.
Hopefully you come on the show again soon. And sooner than the last time.
Okay.
Sound good?
Yes.
We should do... Oh, you didn't watch Spider-Man with me. I got to do a Spider-Man review for Far From Home.
Did you like it?
I did.
Done. Done. There you go.
All right, everybody. Thank you for... Maybe I'll come back on a solo episode. Talk about Spider-Man Far From Home. Talk to everybody later. Thank you again. Daft J?
Yep. Oh, goodbye. Bye.